You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi there, welcome back once again to I Never Thought It Would Happen, brought to you by my good self, Chris Difford, and the wonderful charity Help Musicians. In this episode of I Never Thought It Would Happen, I'll be exploring some new ground. I'll be chatting with a composer who is a hugely talented cog in a giant machine. And that machine is Hollywood. My guest has been responsible for the soundtracks for so many great films, including The Devil Wears Prada, Along Came Polly. But most recently, he's been lauded for his brilliant score to this mind-bending series called Severance, which I completely fell in love with. I have no clue what it's about, but it's absolutely brilliant. So please welcome Mr. Theodore Shapiro, or as he likes to be called, Teddy. Hi, Theodore, or Teddy. I can call you Teddy. Is that okay?
You can call me Teddy for sure.
Excellent. It's so great to have you on this podcast. It's for a charity called Help Musicians. I'm not sure you know much about them.
I only just started learning about them, and I'm so thrilled to be doing this in support of the organization. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, they were started by Edward Elgar over 100 years ago.
Oh, okay.
You know, when he was trying to raise money to help one of his violinists who couldn't afford to bury his friend or something like that. So they all chipped in, and charity's been going ever since. During lockdown, they gave out over £20 million to young musicians and songwriters who were on the back foot.
Incredible.
It's incredible. They have a helpline for well-being. It's just a really great thing, really, isn't it? That's why I work for them.
Amazing. Amazing.
It is.
That's great.
Have you had anything like that in your career? Do you know, there are things like that in America that you can talk about?
I mean, certainly, you know, just very recently, we had these terrible wildfires here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And a ton of money was raised to support musicians. The community of Altadena in particular had a lot of musicians in the recording community here that were affected. And I think that they were able to raise a very significant amount of money to help people get back on their feet.
Yeah, a good friend of ours is Bob Clear Mountain.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And his studio went down, and it's like, oh, no, poor man.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's unimaginable. And, you know, my family was really lucky. And, you know, that being said, you know, anytime you're packing a go bag, you know, and you're ready to evacuate, which we were, it's just a terrifying, it's just a terrifying feeling and an unmooring feeling.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can only imagine what it would be like to actually lose everything and have to start over.
So in your go bag, what records would you put in there from your childhood?
It's a great question. Oh, from my childhood. Okay. That's a really good question. Definitely, I think a Smiths record would need to be represented.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say Meat is Murder would be my choice.
Okay.
I would say that, let's see, what else? you know, I had such a big U2 run, and the Unforgettable Fire is the one that kind of hit, you know, that hit me at the right time.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm not just blowing smoke here, but Squeeze Singles was another another one that that was deeply meaningful to me and was in heavy rotation for a very long time.
That's amazing.
And then a little later on, I would say this remains one of my very favorite albums, but Jeff Buckley, Grace.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Just amazing.
Yeah. I went to see U2 at the Sphere in Las Vegas a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And that was extraordinary. What an amazing show.
Was it
show.
Amazing?
Yeah, it was.
That's great.
There's no show like it at all, ever again, I don't think.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really wanted to do that, and I just never got around to doing it. And hopefully, maybe it'll come back, and I'll be able to go.
So when you were at home, and as like a 10-year, 12-year-old boy, what kind of music was being played around the house?
You know, let's see. I would say my dad, I remember in his record collection, he was a big fan of Melissa Manchester.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. he had like Jim Croce records.
Brilliant.
Bread. Stuff like that. Steely Dan.
Of course.
Pretzel Logic. My mom was a Beatles fan, and so Beatles are sort of the first. Are you familiar with their work? They're not a lot of people know about them.
Yeah.
That was probably the first music that I remember really loving is the Beatles. And then, you know, I was a classical pianist growing up, and that formed a pretty big part of my musical world.
Yeah. There was a lot of discipline in learning the piano, I'd imagine.
Yes. And I came from a house where, you know, my music was supported, but not driven by my parents.
Mm.
You know, and also, you know, I was really into sports and other things. So I was not like a single focused musician. It was always kind of my main thing, but not my only thing.
But did you ever imagine that you would be writing music scores for film and television? Was that something that you grew up loving?
It was definitely something I grew up loving. You know, I have a very vivid memory of seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark when I was 9.
Mm.
And that was a very profound experience for me. Because, I mean, I loved the movie and, I wanted to be an archaeologist at the time, not a film composer. But I was very aware of what that music was doing to my experience. I was very aware of when that theme was entering.
Yeah.
It definitely made a big impact on me.
Yeah. And music in film is extraordinary what it can do. And for me, it can really open up me emotionally and bring me to a completely different place.
Yes.
You know, particularly if I think about something like West Side Story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they're singing Maria, I just can't stop crying. It's just extraordinary the strength of how powerful music can be.
It really is. Boy, that musical is so foundational for me.
Yeah.
And I just get chills thinking about it, yeah.
Yesterday I was watching a film called A Real Pain.
Yes, I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, and the is it Chopin?
Chopin, yeah.
Yeah, all the way through, and it was that you couldn't have chosen better music, really.
Oh, God, yeah, it's so good. Those pieces are so amazing, and, you know, the forward thinkingness of his writing, you know, like I think there are some composers who make a thing that didn't exist prior, and he's one of those composers.
And what was the first film that you put music to that you remember?
The first feature that I scored, I did a documentary film called Ollie's Army, which was quite good, by a filmmaker named Brett Morgan, who has gone on to make some incredible documentaries. He made the David Bowie documentary, Moon Age Daydream, most recently, but he made a really good documentary about Kurt Cobain. And this was his first feature-length documentary. We just happened to meet when he was in film school. And yeah, and that was an interesting experience. You know, I don't think it takes so long to get good at film composing. And so I would be probably horrified to revisit what I did on that film, but it was a place to start.
Yeah. Oh, we all have those moments where you start off at what you're doing and you think, oh, no, you know.
Yeah.
Your ambition's there, but you look back and go, oh, I could have done that better. Or
do you have something like that for yourself?
Well, I can look back at some of the records that we made and think I wish I'd been more engaged in them than I was. That's probably different because I'm in a band and, you know, our growing up is probably very different to yours. And, you know, you work presumably on your own with a small team, but you're the figurehead. You're at the front of the ship. When you're in a band, it's not quite like that. You're all at the front of the ship at the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah. So with the film music that you've done, there must be a discipline to it. That does it drive you to work 9 to 5, or do you get up in the middle of the night and go, I know, I've just thought of a great idea?
Both.
Okay.
My schedule at the office, so my office is not at home.
That's wise.
And so, you know, it's something that I always thought that I would work from home, and then it just so happened when we moved to Los Angeles, we found a house that was great, but it didn't have space for a studio, and I started working away from home. And that was right when we first had kids. And I realized it's actually probably important for my productivity to get away and then come back and sort of be fully engaged in work when I'm away and then fully engaged with my family when I'm home.
Yeah.
And it's just stayed that way. So I tend to work, you know, a 9 to 5 or 10 to 6 schedule every day. And I just have found that, you know, that I've gotten more efficient at my work over time. And so I'm able to kind of keep those strict hours. When I'm in the middle of writing something, I definitely have middle of the night. Like if I'm trying to solve something that I haven't solved, I'll definitely wake up in the middle of the night and start thinking about it and get up and, you know, hobble into the bathroom and record something onto my phone.
I know that feeling, that's funny.
But, but, you know, it's funny. I always find that sometimes if I'm really beating my head against the wall over something at the office, you know, it will be when I leave that I, you know, I figure it out. Like there's space in my brain to just figure out a solution or to just think about it without just being in front of the picture and trying to hammer it out.
Yeah. Do you work mainly from picture or do you deliver music without picture some of the time?
I really like working without picture in the beginning of the process. That's what I most like to do. If it's the type of film that supports it, is to start writing very early on, even before they've started shooting. Because it just opens you up, like it just opens you up to work from a standpoint of thinking about concept and character and themes that maybe gets you to write things that you wouldn't necessarily write if you were sitting in front of the picture.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, if you're working with good collaborators who are good with music, then, you know, they'll find places for this music that you just wouldn't have been able to come up with if you were doing it sitting in front of your computer. And you get happy accidents that you couldn't have planned. And so I love that approach. That's, you know, when we work on Severance, you know, that's very much how it works, is that the rule when we work on Severance is there's no cutting in music from other movies or other TV shows. It's only the original stuff. And so it requires a lot of writing before, you know, before they're in the editing phase.
Yeah.
But then the result is sort of everything is intrinsic to the show. And
yeah.
I think that helps it feel all connected.
It really does. So do you have a script at the beginning of this? So you read it and then get inspired and that sends you off in a musical mode?
Yes, very much so. And yeah, I can't remember, you know, sometimes when I start writing, like they haven't finished the entire series of scripts, but at least there's enough for me to start thinking about the material and to get a sense of what the tone is and what the some of the thematic material is going to be.
So working with Ben Stiller, is he a very musical person? Does he drive you in one direction or does he give you loads of freedom?
He has incredible instincts about music. And so, you know, not musical in the sense of like, could you go to a G flat chord here? But but definitely musical in the sense of just, you know, having a very firm sensibility about what he's looking for. And I feel a ton of freedom when I'm working with him. You know, I don't feel micromanaged at all.
No.
But I also feel like he has a really strong point of view. And I really trust that he's going to catch something if I make a mistake, which is great because it, you know, feeling willing to make mistakes and to, you know, try something that might not work, I think is a really great gift that a director can give to a composer.
Absolutely. And does he, do you or he or both of you together come up with like the jazz influence? Or the one that killed me was the very last scene of the series where Matt Monro sings Windmills of Your Mind. And I just thought that is genius.
You know, it's so great. I can't take any credit for it. It's Mel Torme, by the way.
Oh, Mel Torme. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a wonderful music supervisor on the show, George Draculius. And I think that he and Ben sort of talk about songs and George will, you know, give him playlists of ideas. But I remember that in the very first episode, the track that ended up being Les McCann Burning Coal in the, at the very beginning of episode one of season two, there was a Mel Torme song that was also kind of in the mix for that scene. So Mel Torme definitely had entered Ben's bloodstream. I don't know if it was through George or just on his own, but it was definitely in there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Hi, I'm Chris Difford, and you're listening to I Never Thought It Would Happen. Coming up next, I'm answering your questions, and I can't wait to read your emails. As promised, I'm going to be answering any questions you may send me on any music-related topics that you'd like a little help with, or just some general advice. I'm not a counsellor, but I'm here to help. This is a question from Erica Melton. She says, "Hi Chris, I love to hear you talk about music that matters to you. My dad is a huge Allman Brothers fan. I know you are as well. My older brother first played Squeeze to me when I wasn't even 10 years old, and now I'm 47, and I listen to it all the time. My son is 13, he's a massive Squeeze fan too." That's amazing. "And you live in Swansea, and you play guitar. That's amazing too. I'd like to know what you think it is about great music that makes it speak to generations. The lyrics, the guitar playing, the melodies. Is there a spark in the writing process when you think that's it? People are going to love this and they're going to listen to it for a lifetime." Well, thank you, Erica. That's a fantastic question. And what keeps people coming back, I think, is a sense of place, really. I think when you hear something like the Allman Brothers, for me, I was like 17 years old, and every time I listen to it, I go back to that young lad and his excitement at hearing this wonderful music and wanting to be in a band himself. So these are great questions, Erica, and I hope I've answered them for you. Yeah, cheers. "Greetings from San Diego, Chris. I love your podcast and I have a question as a fellow songwriter that I always wanted to ask. Since you're the Squeeze lyricist, how do you collaborate with Glenn since he focuses on the music? Do you send him fully formed lyrics or are they broken out into verses, bridge and chorus? Or do you give Glenn the latitude to adjust the lyrics to fit what he's building? And is it a hands-off approach until the song is completed and revealed? Or does Glenn come and play you some of the song? Just curious to see how musical genius works. Hope to see you in San Diego again. Thank you so much for this wonderful question. Well, historically, I would send Glenn the lyrics. He wouldn't tamper with them. And he would put wonderful tunes and melodies to them. And the next time I would hear them would be in a rehearsal room. These days, things are slightly different, where we collaborate quite closely on the lyrics. Sometimes not so, and sometimes yes so. It depends. But yeah, it's an open book, and we like to move in all different directions when we're writing songs. So keep your options open. I would. When you're working on orchestrations, is there a studio that you like working in where you can see the picture and hear the musicians playing at the same time?
Yeah, so there are a bunch of really good ones. For me, for the last 5 years or so, most of my recording has been in London. And so there are two incredible studios for recording orchestra in London, Abbey Road,
of course,
and Air. And they're both phenomenal and wonderful experiences, you know, both because of the history of the buildings and because of the wonderful musicians there.
Yes.
So those are two amazing places. And then LA, which of course also has amazing musicians. You know, I have a great amount of history at the Fox scoring stage. And so I like all of the studios, but that one feels sort of like there's a little nostalgia for the, in that one for me.
That's great. So have you ever put music to lyrics?
I've written a couple of songs.
Not writing lyrics. Yeah.
Just writing the music part. And yeah, it's not my, doesn't feel like my main thing, but I always have a good time when I do it.
Yeah.
And I've definitely had some really good collaborations, and I'm proud of some of the songs that have come out of it.
Wow, that's great. And where would you hear those? Where would I hear those songs?
Let's see. So in the movie Spy, there's a main title song. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, for in the film Wet Hot American Summer, which you may not know that, but it's a big cult film, cult comedy film. I co-wrote a song called Higher and Higher with Craig Wedren, a good friend of mine, also the lead singer of the band Shudder to Think. And we wrote a song that's sort of like a cross between Ride Like the Wind by Christopher Cross and
excellent.
I don't know what else. It was for a very stirring sports montage. And that song has had quite a robust life. People seem to respond to it.
There seems to be quite a favor of films now that have music, almost like musicals, if you like. Is that something that you would ever feel like you would like to work in?
That was something I really wanted to do. And I wrote a musical when I was in college.
Oh, my God. Brilliant.
And it was a lot of fun. And I left that experience thinking that it was something that I might like to do more of. And it's just such a difficult, it's a difficult medium. You know, I ultimately don't think that I have the skill set for it. But West Side Story was just such an important piece of music in my life. And I really wanted to be able to do something like that. But, you know, I'm just grateful that there are people like Lin-Manuel Miranda who are the right person to do that. I don't think that I'm the right person.
What about Sondheim? Extraordinary.
Sweeney Todd is just one of my
fantastic
absolute favorite. I mean, that must be for you as a lyricist. Sondheim must be, you know, a real meal for you. Like, it's such an incredible example of of the medium.
Yes, I'm besotted by him. And in fact, here at the National Theatre in London, there's a musical that he didn't finish before he died.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go...
What's it called? Wise Guys?
Wise Guys, yeah. I'm going to go and see that. Apparently, it's really good. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's great. I mean, what a genius. And, you know, have you read any of his books about lyric writing?
I haven't, no.
He wrote two volumes about lyrics, one of which is called Finishing the Hat, and I can't remember the other. And he's just such a genius. And, you know, he writes about some of his West Side Story lyrics very critically.
Yeah.
You know, like I was trying to just show off and show how clever I was instead of, you know, but it really is for him all about character and really finding the language that suits the character without sort of being show-offy about being able to make clever rhymes. And
yeah. Hey, Severance is such a TV show that you could almost imagine one episode being a musical in its own state. It can go anywhere, that show.
You know, it is true. And, you know, I am so impressed with the writer's ability to continue to push the show into new areas while keeping it rooted to its foundation.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think that's a real trick. And, you know, a lot of shows, or, you know, I certainly have seen shows that stray too much in one direction or the other. It's like either it just goes off into left field and it feels unmoored from where it started,
or
it's too much of the same, you know, and, you know, so far, I'm just so impressed with what Dan Erickson and the team have been able to do.
From a viewer's point of view, mostly I feel confused. And then I realize that if you get to the end of the download, there's a description of what happened. And the actors, who are brilliant, you know, sit there and kind of give you their opinion about what they think happened.
Yeah, yeah.
This is genius. It really is. So what's on the horizon for you, Teddy?
I'm working right now on a really good thriller called The Housemaid with the director Paul Feig. This is the eighth film we've done together. And this movie stars Sydney Sweeney and Amanda Seyfried. And musically, I'm collaborating. I brought one of my favorite musicians in the world, and Caroline Shaw, she is a brilliant composer and also a brilliant singer and violinist. So she's just sort of an astonishing musician and one of the great people in the world to collaborate with. Like, she's egoless. She has unbelievable flexibility as a musician to improvise. Mm. It's like one of the great joys in life to get to work with people like her. And so we have this whole palette of vocals that are part of the score, and I'm just having a blast working on it.
Do you work very closely together?
You know, actually, you know, she came down, we do an improvisational session together.
Oh, wow.
And then she goes home and I work with what she's given me.
Mm-hmm.
But we have spoken of, she has written some fantastic scores of her own for TV and film. And, you know, one of these days we'll actually do a proper co-write and work together, I hope. But this one is just her vocals and me writing.
There seems to be a big resurgence recently of choral music, you know, like Eric Whittaker, Voices 8, who Paul Simon used on his last album, which was beautiful. Have you ever worked with a choir?
I have for scores, but I've never written purely choral music.
Mm.
And I would love to do that. I think that would be really exciting. And I love Eric's music. Eric and I know each other a little bit through, we just crossed paths at Juilliard, but we knew each other sort of through mutual Juilliard friends, and he's so brilliant at that, and it's very inspiring. So I would love to have an opportunity to just work in a purely choral palette.
Yeah, I went to one of his concerts in London where he had a choir, and I was like a fanboy backstage trying to get his autograph. Because in that kind of music just touches the soul in a way that not a lot of other music does. And I have, it goes back so many hundreds of years, that kind of music, that kind of singing.
Yeah.
Because the voice is the original instrument. It was before the instrument was invented. And so there's something very caveman about it to me. It really draws me in.
I totally agree. And have you ever sang in a choir?
Probably at school, but not as a grown-up.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't either. It's something that I'm not a very good singer, so I don't know if any choir would want me. But it's something that I'd like to do at some point, because I remember when I was in music school, part of what you'd have to do for ear training class was sing, you know, like three-part madrigals. So you'd pair up with two other students and sing these pieces. And there's just something so incredibly satisfying about making those sounds. It just taps into something primal, which I have no doubt has to do with just the role of the voice in our collective history.
Yeah.
And the idea of doing it with a larger group just feels like it would be a really moving experience.
Yeah, very moving. And the other thing that I find interesting about it is lyrically, it's very disciplined.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of words, but they mean an awful lot.
Yes, yes.
And unfortunately, I'm the kind of writer that writes a lot of words with not a lot of meaning. At least not, I can't find anyway. But yeah, so it's something I'd like to do too. I mean, I'd like to lyrically write a musical. I'd lyrically like to write that kind of stuff too. It's an ambition of mine.
Yeah. If you were writing a musical, would you see yourself trying to write like a through-composed piece, or like in your mind, when you imagine the thing that you would write, are you drawn more towards, you know, Guys and Dolls, where, you know, there's just like a bunch of great songs, or are you writing Sweeney Todd?
Yes, that's a great question. Like you, I think I would be drawn to the script.
Yeah.
And the script would be the thing that I would read, and I would find the meter from the script.
Yes.
Just recently, I've been working on something, and they keep sending me descriptions of the characters. And these characters are from 1958. So there's a lot of sort of after the war, what people were like after the war. So it really makes you delve into your creativity to find the right lyric to go with it. So,
yeah.
I mean, Guys and Dolls I went to see last year and I was knocked out with it, of course. It was amazing.
Oh, it's genius. It's genius.
But yeah, I think that's definitely the way to go. And I think audiences, as I get older anyway, audiences like a bit of a sit down in a nice seat.
Yeah.
And they like a story being told.
Yes, for sure.
You know, there are obviously audiences that like to stand and move around, but for the majority of the people of my age, I think I like to sit down and watch something and get entertained.
Yeah, for sure. Who doesn't like to have a nice sit down?
So when are you next working on Severance again? Do you know? Or?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, they are currently, you know, there's a writer's room and they're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're very committed to really getting the scripts right and, you know, just making sure everything is really lined up and correct before they go. So I know there's a lot of pressure for it to get moving as quickly as possible, but they definitely are prioritizing having it right over having it fast.
And then Ben will get in touch with you and put the script in front of you and off you go.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe even, you know, at the beginning of season two, you know, even without scripts, we sat down at one point and he said, you know, well, there's going to be an episode that's in the forest. And so, you know, think about that. And, you know, there's Cobell is going to be in exile and, you know, in a bleak and wintry location. So think about that. So even before I saw scripts, there were sort of ideas starting to rattle around.
That's amazing. Well, Teddy, thank you so much for you giving up some time to speak to us. People from Help Musicians will be thrilled that you gave your time today.
Oh, it was such a pleasure. It's so nice to talk to you. I'm such a big fan of your work, and it's a real honor to chat with you and an honor to help support this organization.
Thank you, and I hope one day we get to write something together. That would be amazing.
Let's do it.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, what a pleasure that was talking to Teddy. A fascinating insight into a whole different world of music making. I really love the show that he has written the music for. Severance is incredible. You're either an innie or an outie, as they say. And I'm sure you're both an innie and an outie sometimes. So thank you, Teddy. And just listen to the music, because it's bloody brilliant. If you want to know more about the amazing work that Help Musicians does, then take a look at their website, follow them on social media like I do, and please consider donating a little money to the charity. They do incredible work supporting musicians of all types across the UK, changing people's lives for the better. And don't forget, I'm taking your questions from writing, recording, touring, and everything in between. Your well-being, maybe. Send your questions to chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. That's chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. Subscribe to the podcast and tell your mates about it. Keep coming back. I Never Thought It Would Happen is a Give Me Sugar production for Help Musicians.